All right, it's Neil Rosen. Welcome to Sitting Around Talking Movies. We're talking Star Wars. Star Wars, and I'm joined by Bill Brigoli.
The narcoleptic Bill
and
Brigoli.
Bill McCuddy.
Get out of here, you knucklehead.
All right, I'm going to get right to it. Oh, by the way, we're also going to talk about A Kind of Murder with Jessica Biel and Patrick Wilson, and South Side with You, which is a movie about Barack and Michelle Obama's first date. And we're also going to talk about Bridget Jones's Baby, which is on demand and DVD. Stay tuned for that. But in the meantime,
my first date was not that exciting. Michelle was there.
Michelle, but we're going to talk about that.
Got the first base.
Okay, but we're going to talk about Star Wars. Okay, so let me tell you what this is about. So if you remember,
nobody knows what it's
if
about.
You remember, no. If
let's
you remember
begin with the fact that three of us went to the same screening last night. We were
in the same room. We were in a movie theater called Lincoln Square Cinema in Manhattan on 68th Street and Broadway.
Tell us about the emails.
The emails
we got court orders.
Cannot bring a guest. You cannot bring a guest. You cannot bring
Forget
a plug. You cannot
People
divulge
bring
anything.
Guests,
you cannot bring any kind of electronic equipment. No phones. No computers. No iPads. They will be confiscated. You cannot divulge
you were
plot points.
Down. You were I had the.
I walked right in. Nobody patted me down.
I searched twice, but only because I asked for it a second time. But it was crazy security.
Yeah.
Heavy security. Although I walked right in. Nobody bothered me. I just walked right in. And that,
you
what can
considered
I,
a threat.
Well, no. I'm doing this 30 years.
He doesn't know how to tape anything.
But, yeah, right. That's right. Even if I had a video, right, I wouldn't even know how to do it. Not that I would ever do something like that. All right. So, look. So, here's for Star Wars. Most Star Wars fans know this, but if you don't know this, the original movie that came out in 1977, which was called Episode IV, A New Hope, at the very, very beginning of that movie, where it said, long ago in a galaxy far, you know, far, far away, there was this crawl that they have in almost every, which they didn't have in this movie,
They made a point of not having it.
Right.
They just said.
Right. And that beginning crawl says something to the effect of the Empire has successfully fought off the rebels, I'm paraphrasing, fought off the rebels but they have managed to steal the plans for the destructive Death Star. Star, blah, 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 blah. And then that original movie starts where they have the plans and Luke Skywalker and, you know, Han Solo and Princess Leia and Chewbacca, and they all go off and try to, and we know the original movie. Well, what they did here, it's a standalone movie, and they've actually built an entire movie around that plot in that crawl that lasts for a minute and 33 seconds at the beginning of Star Wars. That thing that the rebels of, you know, they quashed the rebels, but they got the plans. That's the movie.
Why are you surprised that they took the storyline?
I'm not surprised.
They already showed us in 1977.
No, I'm saying that it's an interesting idea since there's such a cultish following. It's the up until Avatar and
really
Titanic.
They didn't really have
the highest grossing movie. It's probably the highest grossing franchise in the history of movie making, you know?
I think the Bond is hard.
All right, well, anyway, nobody's negating the Star Wars.
Don't be surprised because that's what they told you.
Right. I'm not surprised. I'm just saying it's an interesting idea to see it come to life. I think on the good news, from a visual standpoint, it's stunning. The production values
What would you expect in 2016?
Are awesome. The battle scenes are really well executed. But on the negative side, Bill McCuddy, go on, take it away.
You love this movie? How many?
No, I don't love this movie.
How many New York One apples?
That's a good question.
1 to 4.
I got
to
think about that. I will tell you by the end of this podcast.
Two? Neil's going to the fruit market right now.
2.5?
I don't know. It's between 2.5 and 3. Here's the problem. The problem for me was that it was action over character development and story. I agree with you. McCuddy and I were talking about it. I thought the last one, The Force Awakens, was much more entertaining and fun. There was a sense of fun that was lacking from this particular thing.
Well, that was a buffet last time. That was a little something for everybody.
That was greatest hits.
Banquet. That was like a greatest hits. This is a standalone movie. And for that reason, it shouldn't require that you know as much about Star Wars as it does. That's my one nit. That's my one thing.
No, I
disagree
completely.
Sat around some nerds who were giggling and hitting themselves and, oh, look, that's going to become this and this is going to become that. It shouldn't have to have that if it's a standalone movie. I also was not, I know we're going to talk to Felicity Jones in a second. I wasn't blown away by her. I like the idea of a strong woman as the lead.
What do you think of the movie, Bill Begulli?
The movie or Felicity Jones?
Everything. Everything Star Wars.
Okay.
With this movie.
All right. Well, I'll start with Felicity Jones. Remember when she was plugging The Theory of Everything?
Yeah, with Eddie Redmayne.
Yeah, there was one of those cocktail parties. And poor Eddie Redmayne wound up being cornered by a bunch of journalists and all holding their cocktails. And no one would talk to Felicity.
No one was talking to Felicity. That's funny.
Except me, of course.
Ah.
But only because the publicist pulled me over and said, would you please talk to this woman? I'll tell you, she's got her head on her shoulders. She's very bright. She's not as maybe overtly sexy or as exciting as a lot of other leading ladies, but she gets the job done. And I thought she did it here. As far as the movie as a whole, I think, well, we can't do it because we're just audio, but we can all hold up hands who fell asleep last night. Not at all. And I will admit to it, but I had worked 4 overnights in a row.
Listen, it really kind of lags there in the beginning. I mean, and I disagree with you, McCuddy. I think that if you do not have – most people that go to this movie are going to have a knowledge of Star Wars. But I think if you don't have a real working knowledge of that first Star Wars movie – that I think you will be a little confused. Mike Sargent, who is
yeah,
a regular on...
Yeah, that's what
on,
I'm saying. A standalone should stand alone,
right,
is what I say.
Right. Mike Sargent, who's a regular on our television show. This is an after show to a TV show that we do called Talking Pictures, which airs locally on New York One and nationally on what used to be Time Warner Cable. Now it's called Spectrum. But Mike Sargent wrote me. He was supposed to do the podcast tonight and said that he liked it a lot and he thought it fit very well between episodes 3 and 4. You could call this episode 3.5. He writes that it had a few minutes of corniness, but it seamlessly kind of went together. But he said it got really confusing, slightly confusing in a few parts, but overall he thought it was great. And he's like a Star Wars nerd.
So this great battle sequence that you're talking about, where the huge, huge spaceships are careening into one another, did you know one from the other? Did you know who was the good guy and who was the bad guy?
No. When that one,
when they're playing bumper car, they're bumper. I don't want to give any spoilers away.
No, there's a huge scene when one spaceship crashes into another spaceship. I had no idea the good guy spaceship, the bad guy spaceship, and there were so many characters in one of those action scenes. There's a 45-minute action sequence at the end, which from a technical visual special effects standpoint is amazing, but it goes on too long. Did you think it went on too long?
They shot it in Florida, it looks like. I didn't know one of the planets looked just like Epcot. Yeah. There's like palm trees on planet Uedu.
Yeah, well, whatever. It's a
right.
But, you know, and I also got confused with, you know, unless these guys were wearing those white plastic stormtrooper things, right? There were so many different characters dressed up fighting in that last 45 minutes. Yes, like you said, McCuddy, I got confused. Are these good guys? Are these the rebellion guys?
Some of the good guys look like volunteer firemen. They've got these helmets on that look like they just crawled out of bed and ran down the station.
Did you like the movie?
I liked it actually more when the action picked up, because at the beginning, again, it was talking and dark.
There's a lot of exposition for people who say this is all action movie.
Well, the story is that, I mean...
The hologram of Mads Mikkelsen that goes on and on.
I love Mads Mikkelsen. So does Bill McCuddy.
I'm a big
right.
fan.
And he's, would you call him, a scientist or a...
Yeah, he's a constructor of scientists.
Okay, answer this.
Is he a scientist?
Yes, he's a scientist. Alicia Vikander. Better than Felicity Jones? Wouldn't she have been better?
She would have been better, but I like Felicity Jones. I have no complaint with Felicity Jones. Bill Begulli talked to Felicity Jones.
Yes, and what did she say?
Well, first of all, she talked about how this is a very different kind of Star Wars movie.
I think it's a great opportunity to explore different styles of Star Wars that we haven't seen before, and I think the audience are really ready for it. There's an appetite for a new adventure, and so we have been given such freedom to experiment and really play within the Star Wars universe.
And what else did she say?
And then she talked about how she wanted to approach her character, Jyn.
It was very important that we found her humanity and her vulnerability, and also that you, as the audience, would be with her, that she doesn't become objectified, that she's not glorified or on any sort of pedestal, that there was an immediacy to her and that you were engaged with her struggle.
Well, I had no problem with
her. Was she making
eyes
with you because of that one cocktail party that you guys sort of had your own time?
Actually, the first thing I said to her at that cocktail party is I thanked her for the roundtable interviews we did for The Theory of Everything. She actually made eye contact with everyone. You know, some of these stars, they just look off into space and they're looking at us. She made very good eye contact, and she chucked that up to her
theatrical. I think she had a sexy quality in the Star Wars film in Rogue One.
I didn't. Very big jaw.
Sexy.
I mean, not. Angelina Jolie back in the day, you know, Lara Croft sexy, or not Alicia Vikander in Ex Machina sexy,
right.
But I think she had a certain appeal and quality.
Alicia Vikander could take her in a bar fight easy. I didn't see her fighting that successfully or that strongly in the film.
So the story is that, you know, she's a little kid, like 7 years old, this character, Jin. And by the way, what's with the Asian? So many characters. There's an Asian blind guy running around.
No, this was cast at the United Nations because yeah. And Diego Luna is in it. He's
Coca-Cola ad.
But there's an Asian blind guy who keeps running around the whole movie, going, "I am with the Force. The Force is with me. I am with the Force. The Force is with."
Apparently, it is because they can't shoot him.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
But that character was not really developed. You know, and there's so anyway, it starts out, so there's this little kid, and they're fighting. They don't want to be part of the evil empire, and they've been hiding on this planet. But the guy is a genius scientist who is able to, like, build the Death Star. So they kind of
they need him.
They kidnapped him.
They need Frank Lloyd Wrong.
And do they kill his wife? It's the beginning of the movie.
I think they do kill.
Yes, they do.
They kill the wife, and the daughter hides. And the
was this when you were sleeping, when the wife was killed?
No, I was not. And the daughter grows up to be this character played by
Felicity Jones.
Felicity Jones.
Rescued by the great Forrest Whitaker, who you can tell has like another half an hour that he filmed in this movie. He even makes reference to a time when she left him, and in a way that makes it seem like we've seen that scene. That scene ain't in the movie because it's 2 hours and 10 minutes.
Really?
It's too long. And snooze wars, nothing
the only
but snooze
I did
wars.
Like, there's a forerunner to C-3PO. It's another robot, and it's not all gold and shiny. It's black, and it's the robot
Tudyk?
Is K2SO, and he was the only real comic relief in the movie.
Alan Tudyk.
Yeah. And
who
he
also played a robot in, what was it, AI or...
Yeah, oh, really?
Yeah, he played a robot.
You know, he's funny, and that whole storyline is humorous because it's a Stormtrooper robot, right? Because it gets to walk around.
Reprogrammed,
right. Like, they wouldn't know that that's happened. And anyway, but look, it's...
Is he in the robot uniform, Alan?
No.
He's
no.
Just voicing
no.
the thing.
Yeah. Oh, well, he did motion capture. Supposedly, he wore these stilt-like things so that they could get the right eye line.
Okay.
But he did actually act, and they did a motion capture thing with him.
Okay.
How do I know so much?
I don't know. Tell us more.
Well, there's cameos, which I won't reveal, that
have
motion capture on there.
Well, can we talk about the other thing that, I don't know, on our show today, David Fear from Rolling Stone didn't want to reveal the name of someone who is recreated.
Yeah, I don't want to do it.
Think that's a spoiler?
Yeah, I think it's
been all over the stories about it. Well, I will say,
you could say that some people have been recreated.
Some people have been recreated, and this one guy is amazing. Amazing. That may be the best special effect in the whole movie, better than any of the fight scenes and any of that.
I think there's another character that crops up, let's say, at the end of the movie who's been recreated. And I think that's also an amazing special effect.
A lot of people are complaining that that's overlit and doesn't look natural.
I don't know. I liked it. It surprised me, and I liked it, and I won't reveal what it is.
And Darth Vader's in it. That's not giving to it.
No. Way. But you know Darth Vader is in it because...
I know.
People
liked him.
Because
they missed him in the last one. They didn't get to see him last year.
Right, but you got the Adam Driver Darth Vader
wannabe. Mini Vader.
Yeah. Right. So, look, I think that if you like strictly action, you'll think the last 40 minutes are great, but the plot's a bit muddled, and it lacks much joy and fun of the original. But the real question here is, will it satisfy diehard Star Wars fans?
Well, it's going to satisfy Disney because
Mike Sargent is, and they liked it.
No, I don't like it.
But
here's who's going to like it, Disney, because here's the headline in the Hollywood Reporter. Or is anybody listening to me?
Yeah,
Hollywood Reporter says box office preview: Rogue One could blast past $300 million in global debut.
Yeah, well, of course it's going to make a ton of money.
No, that would be a record.
But here's the thing: that really piece of shit episode one, the when Lucas returned, the one that had Jar Jar Binks in it, that whole thing. Okay, I mean, that busted box office records because everybody wanted to see it.
At the time.
But then, you know, yeah, at the time. And then it comes out and then everybody was like, this blows. You know what I mean? So, I mean, the question is, when it's all said and done and everybody's seen it, will Star Wars fans go, this was great, this was okay, this was terrible? I mean, I think they're going to say that it was good. I don't think they're going to think it was like the greatest.
B minus. I know another critic gave it a C plus. What's your letter grade if you won't give us your
No, I haven't
Apple
decided
score?
Yet. I said between 2.5 and 3. All that's right. That's what I'm thinking.
So that would be a B plus?
I think you have to review the movie the same way you have to review a Bond film if you don't like Bond films or a horror film if you don't like horror films. You have to look at it two ways. You have to look at any movie, any franchise, how will the people that are devotees of the franchise, how will they react to it? Is it a good Bond film? Is it a good horror film? You know, in the canon of those movies. And then you have to say, how is it for the layman, somebody who's just a casual
watcher?
So
we disagree. You think the layman will like this. I say it's just for the Star Wars fans.
No, I think the layman will find it to be okay. I think it really is messy and muddled and boring in parts, you know? And I think even that action stuff at the end, which really is spectacular looking, goes on far too long. And yes, like Mike Sargent, who is a big fan of Star Wars and knows the stuff up and down, got there 45 minutes before the screening yesterday, got his seat, he was all set to go. Even he was confused a little bit with the story. I'm not saying the basic story about the girl trying to get the plans for the Death Star, that everybody understands, but there's so much characters running around. And yes, I think you make a brilliant point, Bill McCuddy, when you said the two...
Which one?
When the two... There's this scene where two spaceships crash into each other. And I forgot about that. I was saying, right, is the spaceship on the left, is that one crashing into the right one? And is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? Or everybody started, I don't, other than the audience clapping, I'm going, oh, I guess that's a good thing because the audience is cheering a little bit. But I wouldn't have known if the audience wasn't cheering. I had no idea what was going on with that. And there's other scenes where I had no idea what was going on. And there's so many characters in that ground action battle scene. I did lose track of, is this a good guy? Is this a bad? And then there's one, the Diego Luna character at one point. He's a good guy. He's a bad guy. He's a good guy. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I don't think it's overly confusing, but I think there are confusing moments to it. No?
As a friend of mine says, there are no Jews in this movie either.
Well, there you go.
Point it out.
Behind the scenes, perhaps.
I don't know. So there you go. Star Wars, Rogue One. They're going to make a Star Wars movie every year. Every year you're going to have a Star Wars movie now. That's Disney's plan.
I will say one thing about last night.
They have a young Han Solo movie that they're making.
We saw it in the exact same
Alden
theater.
Alden Ehrenreich is playing him.
Oh.
He was the singer in Hail Caesar.
I know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. What is it?
Well, just to wrap this up, we saw it in the same, because it comes around nicely. We saw it in the same theater we saw the Star Wars film in last year.
Yeah. Right.
Just as many celebrities, there were some people from Saturday Night Live there last night, presumably looking to write some sketches maybe. Colin Jost's there. He's the head writer. And Bobby Moynihan. And I will tell you that last year people applauded. They were excited. They laughed more. And it was more of a ride for regular folk than it was this year in the exact same room, the exact same theater.
The exact same room, the exact same theater, I think, is not that important to the overall impression of the movie.
Well,
but
same number of people, same kind of A-list media crowd.
I had
crowd
more fun with The Force Awakens. They brought back all the characters in The Force Awakens, and I was thrilled to see, you know, Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher in the movie last year, you know, together. And then they had that big Luke Skywalker thing, cliffhanger thing at the end. And, yeah, it was just a lot of fun. It was Star Wars' greatest hits. They brought the Millennial Falcon out. I mean, it was just like they had a bar scene. Yes, it was as if J.J. Abrams last year took what's the greatest things in Star Wars and just kind of put them up there and... It was just a blast. It was a lot of fun. There was a sense, as I said earlier, there was
more
a sense of fun
than
that
this
was, yeah,
movie.
A lot more fun. There was a sense of fun lacking from
all
this.
Right.
But I wonder if that will satisfy. We will find out if the diehard Star Wars fan will love the film, hate the film, find
now,
it.
Now, let me ask you this, Neil. Instead of. Neil's knocking all the microphones over. He's like Reagan at that one speech. I paid for this microphone. We're not even using the one you first knocked over.
Okay, go on.
Okay.
Say it again.
Let me ask you this. Felicity Jones or would Renee Zellweger have made a better?
Well, yes, Renee Zellweger would have made, no. But Renee Zellweger is in Bridget Jones's Baby, the third in the series of the Bridget
Jones. That little
Jones.
Tramp.
And then Bridget Jones. And, you know, I was reading, after I saw the movie, I started reading about it. And a lot of our colleagues, which I don't know if you want to say this is fair or not fair, but a lot of them mentioned the fact that they were just interested in looking at Renee Zellweger's face because there was that very famous, it was all over every magazine,
she walked
newspaper,
a red carpet
in the internet, right, where she kind of had that horrible plastic surgery and she looked nothing like Renee Zellweger. So in this particular movie, she looked back to Renee Zellweger again.
Yeah, pretty
so
much.
Did she have corrective surgery to make herself look like the way she used to look again? Well,
a lot of that happened? Is a healing process, is what I'm told. I haven't had any work done yet, but it's early. It could happen. There's a real awkward phase, like up to 6 months, where you're puffy and look weird, and that's what a pretty famous doctor explained to me. She may have just been healing in that process in that time, and had to go to that one thing.
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the movie?
Yeah.
Well, I thought she looked like Renee Zellweger, and I think she looked fine. Not like that terrible still shot that was circulating around for
but
a
the
long
movie,
time.
Do we recommend it or not?
Well, you know, in this one—
Should she have kept the baby?
Tell us, Bill Bregoli, what the plot of this third Bridget Jones's movie is about.
It starts off with one of the more funny. Before I get into the plot, I like the way it started. It starts with a memorial service for Hugh Grant's character, who was in the previous movies.
That's true. Well, it actually really starts with funny. Her sitting at home singing to.
She's singing into her yogurt or something.
So it's one funeral and a birth instead of four weddings and a funeral.
And she's sort of. The idea is she's balancing two men. She decides, all right, it's time to sow my oats or let somebody else sow their oats. And she's got two guys, one of which is a handsome magazine publisher, really rich, right? The Patrick Dempsey character. Yeah. And then there's the Colin Firth character, who's sort of an uptight, but the kind of lawyer all women find attractive, even when he wears that funny wig that British lawyers wear. And she finds out she's pregnant. She doesn't know who it is. And when they say, well, we can do an amniocentesis, and they whip out the needle they're going to use, she says, no, I can't do that. I'm just going to live with not knowing who the dad is. And that sets up the rollicking fun through the rest of it.
Wasn't that an ABBA musical?
It's the plot of Mamma Mia, except it's two guys instead of three guys. But
and wasn't Colin Firth in that, too?
Yeah, he was.
He tried to sing, too, remember?
He fucks a lot, this Firth, and it gets him in trouble. Sometimes he gets
Mamma Mia was one of the worst movies. I love the play, on the musical on Broadway, but the movie was just awful.
Pierce Brosnan can sing, said no one ever.
And who was the third? It was Pierce Brosnan. It was Colin Firth. Who was the third guy?
Peter Skarsgård. No.
Alexander Skarsgård. No.
No, the other Skarsgård-y one. The other Swedish guy.
Oh, yes.
Skarsgård.
Stellan Skarsgård. And Meryl Streep. And what's-her-face was the girl.
Amanda Freed.
Seyfried.
Seyfried.
So did you like it, Bill and Bill?
It was okay. It was fun.
Paycheck.
Yeah.
Well,
total paycheck
movie. You know what this movie was missing for me? Hugh Grant. I don't think Patrick Dempsey has the charm and that sarcasm that Hugh Grant has. Hugh Grant was originally slated to do the movie, but he pulled out of the movie. But there is a twist where he might be seen in another movie without revealing too much.
Ghost
of
Hugh Grant.
I don't know. I mean, you know, there's a lot of gags, a lot of slapstick stuff. Some of
it took him forever to get to that hospital.
Yeah, some of it works. For every joke that works, 10 don't. I think if you like the Bridget Jones series, if you're a real fan, then I say check it out on demand or on DVD, and you'll have a decent time. But for casual fans of the series, I'd say I would not see it, and I think that it lacks the charm of the original. Do you think it's better than the second one? You think the third one is better than the second one, or about on par?
I don't know, about the same.
Didn't have Emma. What's her name? Emma.
Oh.
Emma Thompson.
Yeah.
Well, it's Emma funny. Thompson's, yeah, in this
She's
one.
Funny in this one.
The OBGYN.
Right.
Yeah, she's okay.
That helped. That
it's okay. So here's another movie that's out on demand this week, and it's called A Kind of Murder, and it's kind of a noir thriller thing. It's set in the
imagine a movie where Jessica Biel isn't the hot one.
It's set in the suburbs, I guess, in the 1960s, where Patrick Wilson is. He's an architect. He designed his house, but he also writes stories, murder mystery stories. And he becomes intrigued with a real-life murder case that's in the paper where, and if you know this actor, he was really good. I think he's underrated, too. Eddie Marson, who plays Terry on Ray Donovan. And he has...
he's been in tons of stuff.
Yeah, he's great. And he's a suspect. His wife, Eddie Marson, who owns a bookstore in Newark... or somewhere, I think it's Newark, his wife is murdered and he becomes a prime suspect in that. So Patrick Wilson becomes fascinated with this and he's in a very unhappy marriage with his wife, Jessica Biel, and he starts an affair with this other girl who's really...
Haley Bennett, I think her name is.
Yeah. And
very pretty.
So he pays a visit to the Eddie Marson character. I don't know, I guess to kind of find out, you know, I don't know why.
For no good reason.
Yeah, for no good reason.
There's lots of scenes in this movie
right.
for no good
reason.
So then
Vincent Kartheiser from Mad Men, who played Pete Campbell, he's the detective on the case.
No, Chief, I'm going to solve this one.
Right, I'm the smartest guy.
Move on. There's no evidence. No, I know he did it.
Right, and the whole thing becomes... First of all, it was based on a novel by the great Patricia Highsmith, who did my favorite Hitchcock movie, Strangers on a Train. And
yeah, well, she's not great.
Right, there's
she was great.
Yeah, right. Well, she's dead.
Don't call her the great.
Well, she was great with Strangers on a Train, but this is
bad.
The novel, it's a really hard novel to bring to the screen, and apparently this writer, this director, Amy Goddard, didn't really do a good job with it because the plot becomes convoluted and implausible halfway through and you lose interest in the characters in the film itself.
Absolutely. It starts out cool. It looks like kind of a twisted Mad Men episode, and it's got that kind of look and feel, and it nails the time period pretty well, but man, oh man. He drives a cool Corvette, but
that is a cool Corvette. It's a blue and white Corvette from what year is
Nautical
that?
Nautical blue. That's like a 63, I think.
Yeah, very convertible. Cool convertible. Yeah, that's a very cool
It's Corvette. Cool. Or 65,
and everybody's
maybe,
wearing their sweaters tucked into their pants. It's a very bizarre look. in the night. Patrick Wilson has these.
Well, you were paying attention to things I wasn't really.
I know, because it was just so like weird.
How about that jazz lounge they go to in like a tunnel? It's basically like there weren't clubs. There were just like sewers that had a microphone and some lighting. But anyway, here's the thing. Here's the headline.
You're going to watch the trailer.
That's the point I'm going to make. You're going to watch the trailer and go, oh, this looks kind of good. These guys are wrong. We're not wrong. This is not good.
No, it's good for like 40 minutes. It's interesting, but there's no payoff and it's a waste.
Now let's talk about some news. Like, have you done your top 10 list? Can we do those next week?
We can do that next week.
Before you haven't put your news. You haven't put your list together.
Save it for next week. Tease it. But I want to talk about Southside with you.
Because wait a minute, I want to say that I picked my top 10, and one of them was Hacksaw Ridge, and I got a little shit from some people.
No,
I got yelled at in
the Critics' Choice Awards. We can talk about that for a few minutes.
Yeah, we've been talking about the Critics' Choice Awards,
so
and we had them Sunday
Awards
night.
The Critics' Choice Awards took place last week, and they gave Sunday night, and they gave La La Land Best Picture. But out of their 10 nominees, Hacksaw Ridge was one of those.
No, it was on my 10 best list, and so I got called out by some other people for saying, how can you support Mel Gibson?
It's about the
movie,
not about the person.
And I'm like, it is about the movie, not the person.
You should divorce yourself from taking personal feelings. You should take right. I think you did the right thing. If you like that movie,
so will Hacksaw Ridge be in your top 10?
I don't know. I am comprising my top 10. I still have a couple of things. I've seen Hacksaw Ridge and I like the movie, but I still have a couple of other movies to see. Big movies that I have to see, and I'm not gonna reveal my. I'll tell you that Manchester by the Sea so far is probably my leading contender for my favorite movie of the year, but you know it's a very weak year. I mean, in any.
I don't know. I had trouble
There's no Brooklyn or Spotlight or Argo.
Well, there is for me, but I'm not going to say what it is.
Or a movie where I'm just like blown away by that movie this
Billy,
year.
You got a top 10 yet? Are you thinking about a couple that you like?
I have to see Silence tomorrow night.
Yeah, we're seeing Silence tomorrow also. Silence, we should tell you, is the
Shoot Me Now
Martin Scorsese film.
Shoot Me Now.
Well, you want to really get shot? My buddy who's friends with the editor, saw the 3-hour and 51-minute version.
Okay, listen.
So they pared it down to 240,
245?
We're going to
talk about Silence, but I will just say one thing. It's almost 3 hours, and I got it in 15 minutes. That in the 17th century, there were these missionary priests that wanted to bring Catholicism and Christianity to Japan. And the Japanese government did not want that because they wanted Buddhism. You know, they felt it was a dangerous influence. And because they couldn't get the priests to back off, they kept torturing Japanese people in front of these priests' eyes in the most horrific ways that you could imagine.
Like Saw? Are they in a room with a weird key hidden in the gut?
20 minutes of torture, and then they'd go to the priest. Okay, you're gonna leave the country now and renounce Christianity. Torture more people, and that is the whole movie for 3 hours.
Almost not to bring Gibson back, but like Passion of the Christ.
Why don't you just see it? We'll talk about it next week.
I mean,
it's filmed beautifully, but I mean, I just couldn't take it after a while. But
Andrew Garfield, better in that or better in Hacksaw Ridge?
Yeah, that's a good question. Andrew Garfield is pretty great in this movie, but let's talk about it next week.
Okay, we'll see.
All right, so I want to talk about.
Let's finish
the Critics' Choice. Yeah, so La La Land, Best Picture. I think you think that's an indicator that it'll win Best Picture? I've always said it's going to win the Best Picture at the Academy Awards because Hollywood loves movies about Hollywood, and this is kind of a love letter to Hollywood.
It sure is. Yeah. And maybe that'll work against it, too. Maybe they realize, we've done every Hollywood movie we can.
It's kind of like The Artist in that way. But I'll tell you the reason the broadcast film critics...
And Argo, Hollywood saves the day. I mean, it's always, it's always like Hollywood loves Hollywood,
To a certain extent. I have a problem with the broadcast film critics this year predicting things because they moved the show up to be the first show. So we don't really know what our influence is until the whole thing's over.
Well, I'll tell you the problem with moving that show up is the day after that show aired, the Golden Globes announced their nominations.
So whatever thunder Joey Berlin wanted to get from being
the first out of the box and being influential, the papers, the entertainment news was dominated the next morning, not with who won the Critics' Choice Awards, but La La Land got all these Golden Globe nominations.
No, they did that. They did that because they're pissed. The Golden Globes are pissed at the broadcast film critics. They wanted to take all the air out of the room, and they did it. I got called by 4 different radio stations to go on the air Monday morning, and
it was
to talk about the Golden Globes nominations. I go, what about the Broadcast Film Critics Awards that happened the night before? Not so much.
No.
You can bring that up at the end if we have time.
And what was that thing about T.J. Miller? He couldn't get arrested? Well, guess what?
He did get arrested, and he thought that was a big story, and he made a big joke
about
it.
Nobody understood the joke.
Yeah.
Well, I think that the Critics' Choice Awards are never, and I know the aim is to, and I do believe that
full disclosure, we're all members.
Right, that we're a more legitimate body than the Golden Globes, who I have very little regard. I do not have a lot of regard for.
90 members of the Hollywood Foreign Press,
and some guys. I write a newsletter that's read by 15 people in Tasmania.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's just kind of like what
the Warsaw Penny Saver is what I always say.
Yeah, so I think we do have a more legitimate group, but I don't think that the show will ever become the Golden Globes unless it gets a huge network contract. The way, it has to be on ABC, NBC, CBS, or Fox. Now, the Golden Globes, before they were on television, nobody really paid much attention to them. And then Dick Clark bought them. And then they were on TNT back about 30 years ago.
As like a luncheon, I think. They were on during the middle of the day.
And they were broadcast on TNT. And nobody was really watching TNT. It was, and when they went to NBC, that's when it became a big deal. So the Critics' Choice Awards are on A&E. How many people, despite the promotion, how many people are really watching A&E? I mean, I had to find out what it wound up being channel 46, but I had to find out what channel number is this on my dial, as opposed to the
Golden
Globe.
But they've been
on
the CW. Look, come on, let's
bounced around.
Let's crawl before we walk.
Wasn't it on VH1? It was on VH1.
It's been a couple of places. I think A&E is certainly the most prestigious.
Prestigious, yes. But I think that being on what was the one you just mentioned?
The CW?
Yeah, CW is probably bigger in terms of audience than...
CBS owns a chunk of it, too. That would help them out.
So our final movie that we're going to talk about today is Southside With You. Bill McCuddy.
We teased it.
Take it away.
So we should talk.
Tell us what it's about.
Why do I sound like Chet Huntley and not
thank you, David.
Obama?
No.
It's about...
You actually sound like David Brinkley. It was like, thank you.
I knew.
Thank you, Chet.
So this supposes that the world cares about... The first date in 1989 between Michelle, what's her maiden name? They say in the movie, and Barack Obama, as her dad says, Barack who? This is an interesting idea for a movie. The leads in it are talented, but I was kind of bored going on basically on the show called Hallmark Lifetime kind
of
movie.
That is the perfect way to describe this. I said it's in my notes. It's a
lifetime
made.
If it weren't these two people, which is of course absurd to say because it wouldn't have been made, but if you had made this movie about the first date of just two regular people and they did everything that these two do, you would turn it off in the first 5 minutes.
Well, that's the only interesting thing about the movie is because you go, oh, it's Michelle and Barack Obama. But, you know, the screenplay direction, overall production seem like a TV thing. It seems like second rate, you know? And I thought the Parker Sawyer guy who played Barack Obama was kind of convincing as Barack Obama. I did not think Tika Sumpter as Michelle Obama. I couldn't really buy into that at all.
Oh, I thought she was good.
The whole thing didn't seem real to me. They were going on a date. I know you didn't see this, Bill Bergoli. This date was something, instead of 1989, was something out of the 1950s. It was an Ozzie and Harriet date, complete with, like, they go to an ice cream shop.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
I mean, they literally do. And I'm like, you know, they don't seem like they're real people having, you know.
Supposedly everything in the movie happened except that. For a community meeting that they went to on a
Thursday.
But
the dialogue sounds like they're reciting dialogue as opposed to actually acting and talking like normal people do. They come off these two angelic 1950s Donna Reedish type characters on a date, and I didn't buy into it.
Let's be honest, it wasn't going to get made any other way. If it was dark, or he was an asshole at some point or something,
that
would have been interesting. But they weren't going to go there.
Like a Hallmark card.
There's almost too much respect.
The Obamas have gone on the record as saying that they are mystified why anyone would care enough about their first date to make a movie about it.
That's just being self-deprecating.
But I agree. I don't think it's that eventful of a date, as you said, to build an entire film around this thing. Uh-huh. I mean, they go to the movies. Okay, so they saw Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing. They go to an ice cream shop.
And they
have
a pretty ridiculous debate with a white guy at the end of, not even a debate, a conversation.
Yeah, why in Do the Right Thing that Mookie threw
Mookie
the trash can.
Really? Was that a mystery to anybody? And then Barack has this bullshit answer. Then he then goes, so he kind of was sucking up to the man. And then when he goes away, he turns to Michelle and goes, that wasn't what I really thought.
That's right. I just told him that because...
Yeah, it's what he wanted to hear.
I know.
That's forceful.
I mean, the entire movie is based around the premise, the entire movie, where Barack Obama considers it a date and Michelle does not consider it a date.
Right.
She's like, this is not a date. We're colleagues. I'm your advisor. I'm above you in the firm.
And the beginning of the movie, he picks her up. The end of the movie, he drops her off. And that's the whole movie.
I know. And it's like, it's not a date. It's not a date. It's not a date. And finally, at the end, she kind of concedes to the fact that they've been on a date because they share a kiss.
Well, that's the cute little thing, yeah.
And I was, you know, it's boring. I mean, other than the fact that it's Michelle and Barack Obama, they're on a date. It's not like if something happened on the date, that would be like they had a date and it was the day that the World Trade Center went down and it was in New York and how they were. But no, it's just, let's go over. I'm going to buy you some ice cream, Michelle. What flavor do you like? You know, I'm going
to. Let's go to a movie.
Let's go to a movie. We got a couple of hours to kill. You know, I heard this is good. I like this Spike Lee guy. I think your dress is very pretty, Michelle. You know, I think you're underrating yourself.
Wow, we suck, both of us.
And then there's little reveals like. My father was not around much when I grew up. You know, my mother's white. Yep, she is. You know.
Where's my birth certificate? I left it here somewhere.
That would have been
all
funny.
All right, so there you go. So listen, you don't want to miss next week's show if you've lasted this long. Because we're talking about fences, and we're talking about this new Jim Jarmusch movie called Patterson, and we're talking about silence in more detail than we did today, the Martin Scorsese movie, and we're talking about Hidden Figures, the Kevin Costner, Taraji P. Henson movie, and we're talking about all the movies that are opening up Christmas Day, so you don't want to miss that. So for Bill Bregoli.
Yes.
And Bill McCuddy.
Yeah, that's
and
me.
And Neil Rosen, here I am. Thanks for sitting around talking movies. And what do we do every week on this show, Bill McCuddy?
We watch the bad movies, several of which we told you about today. A Kind of Murder would be one of them, so you don't have to.
We do. We'll catch us next week. Thanks.